Hey yo, hey yo, this your boy CG over at Homage Hip Hop Portrait, brought to you by NWT Entertainment. And you know what it is, we like to put appreciation in hip hop, but we also want to put appreciation in broadcasting. So without further ado, I want to give a shout out to my boy over at the Weed Feed Podcast. That's the Weed Feed Podcast. It's not completely about weed. It's actually talking about the business side of weed. So go ahead, boy, get your money. We see you over at the Weed Feed Podcast. This your boy CG over at Homage Hip Hop Poetry. Thank you. We see you. And guess what? We appreciate you. Keep doing your thing.
Hey family, how you doing out there? I want to say hello to the world. Of course, this is America. No matter what state you may be in or what city, no matter, in some cases, when it comes to people of color, it doesn't matter where you're at. The common denominator is the same. Not only are blacks being disproportionately killed by white police officers, as of September 19, 2020, 10:20 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. But one of the other plagues that is facing black people, particularly black men, is that blacks are also disproportionately incarcerated. Blacks in the United States pretty much may be 12 to 15% at the most of the population, yet they average about 40 to 50% of the prison population. So we need to take a look at what strategically is going on here. Now let's keep in mind, and I want everyone to keep in mind, the 13th Amendment. This is a very important amendment. And the reason why we bring up the 13th Amendment is because this amendment is crucial. The 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution states, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, when you hear that word, involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted of a crime, convicted of a misdemeanor, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. So let me interpret that for you. So what that simply says is that involuntary servitude cannot be infringed upon any human being. Okay? I can't take anyone and make them a slave. Okay? The only way constitutionally that anyone can be made to work for nothing is if you are incarcerated or convicted by law of a felony or a misdemeanor and sentenced to jail or prison. And so this right now is becoming today's biggest promotion. Did I say what I just said? Well, yeah. Let me give you an example. Our prisons in all of our states are pretty much at this point filled to their capacity, if not double. Where beds, where there used to be two prisoners in a room, there's now four. Where there used to be one prisoner in a cell, there's now two. So prison overnight basically went from the thousands, like a couple hundred thousands throughout the United States, to like millions. So I want you to vision that. Prisons went from like a couple hundred thousand to millions overnight within a space of about 5 to 10 years. And a lot of it had to do during the Clinton years, the Democratic years, where Clinton days, Clinton was up against some hard oppositions with the Republicans. And they do play political games, Republican and Democrats, with prisoners. That's one of their things to say to the voters. Hey, you know, we're going to make sure we keep the bad guys locked up, and they're going to make sure that we're going to keep them away from you. And so no one thinks about the aftermath. And the aftermath is when you lock so many people up for so long a period of time, the prisons start to swell from within, and they're so filled that it's not safe for correctional officers. It's not safe for prison staff, because the more prisoners that you clam in a sardine can, and expect them to live within that sardine can, and that's the only places they go, and the walls of the sardine can is, you know, the walls of the prison, and that's all they can live in is within that limitation. Well, you're going to find that there's going to be some uprisings, okay? And so in prisons, you know, there is major uprisings in prisons because crowded conditions. But who gives a damn, really? I mean, who really gives a damn? Who really cares, okay? I mean, prisoners are simply prisoners. They broke the law. Only thing we know, that most of them break the law, as far as we know. At least the system makes it seem like that. Whether they're on, some of them are out on parole, you know, serving their sentence, the rest of their sentence in the community, and they go back. Recidivism. The recidivist rate is very high for prisoners. A lot because the prisoners are, like I said, they're all crammed in the sardine cans, and they basically, that's how they have to get along. And there's a lot of mob rule mentality in there. Guards, you know, don't want to get too involved because it's so crammed up. It's so many things going on. They can't even function. It's very unsafe. So now United States, what they're doing, since those prisons are so crammed into this sardine can, and it's a population explosion. Like I said, where one time it was a couple hundred thousand prisoners worldwide, United States, and it exploded to millions now. I want you to understand that mathematical fact as we go along here. And the majority of these prisoners are minorities. Nobody's trying to say that minorities are committing all the crimes, because minorities are a small group of people in United States. Like I said, 12 to 15%. And there's no way they can commit all the crimes. Whites commit the majority of crimes. It's just that blacks are sentenced, and minorities, Latinos, are sentenced at a higher rate. They're convicted at a higher rate. They're subject to be sentenced more so than whites. Whites are subject to options like probation, fines. Blacks and Latinos traditionally can't play the fines. They can't even get out on bail a lot of times. So blacks, Latinos, the prisons are pretty much just filled with minorities, even though the minorities are not the majority. Okay. I mean, excuse me, the minorities are like 12 to 15% in United States. But when it comes to the prison population, they're the majority. So that's what I'm trying to basically say. So it's disproportionate, and that's what we want to take a look at. And I'm going to do a couple podcasts on this. Now, Michelle Alexander came out with an excellent book that covers this subject. And I mean, it's the best book out there on the market, The New Jim Crow: Mass Incarceration in the Age of Color Blindness. And I mean, the mass incarceration is speaking on behalf of black males, predominantly in prisons, got the most time and got the longer sentences. And I read this book, and it was fascinating. From the time I opened up the prefix and read the first chapter, I never put it down. I was reading it night and day. In fact, I think I read it twice and also did a book report on it. This book right here is a leading piece of reference that I would read. It's very easy reading. You can get it in paperback or hardback, and you can also get it on a CD. But this is a great, great writing. The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander. You can also get an audio book on it too, which I'm going to get because I like to sometimes listen to things like this here, you know, and it just like, I mean, it reads the book to you. So what I would like to do is kind to focus on why and what's happening that there's so many black people and so many prisons today are so filled with black people and minorities. One of the things that I know is that a lot of times in these places, they're so crammed with people, they don't have time anymore for rehabilitation. There was a time when whites were the majority in the prisons, and that was a long time ago. When whites were the majority in the prisons, they had what's called rehabilitation. There's no longer rehabilitation. It's simply now just total incarceration. The people are in there, they're using them now for what they call private prisons. And the state have all now are making all kinds of deals. And the biggest thing that's going on right now, and I want you to keep in mind what I said, involuntary servitude. And I want you to keep in mind that America was built for free by black people. And it was imprisoning them, putting them in jails and stuff like this here. Well, they're doing the same thing today. Okay. And people don't even know it. Right up under our noses, we got the same slave prisons, although they're under a different name. The United States prison population has swelled to a point where they're so crowded that they had to reach out to the feds and to the state. And they're coming up with a thing now. It's been in effect about a year or so. It's been in effect for longer than that, but it's really starting to make money, and it's really starting to be like chat. It's like they're utilizing people now, are the prisoners, basically, just like they used to do back in the day, free labor, involuntary servitude. You automatically, once you're incarcerated, you can be made to work and do things, you know, for people that you ordinarily wouldn't have to do in society. So this is what's going on now. And there's a booming prison population. There's a booming prison industries right now are booming. And the industries are, there's all kinds of businesses behind the scenes that are making money off of prisoners. And this is the new slavery. Okay. Private prisons is run pretty much by a corporation. Okay. And you'd be surprised of a lot of these senators and all these different people who got interests in these places, these private prisons. And you would be surprised some of the people that's been leading people, people with the money, the one percenters, who are investing now into prisons and the industries in prisons. Prison industries is booming. It's a booming industries. In fact, even though we got COVID out here in the United States, and the president said, a lot of people lost their jobs out here who worked in some of the, you know, places like bars and restaurants and stuff like that. Prisoners, even though they're in there all together and they have the greater chance of getting something like COVID, and there's a lot of sexual and homo stuff that go in there also. So they've done nothing to prisons. Prisoners are still working. They're still keeping that same schedule, making the money in the private industries that have invested into them. And not only private industries, but private prisons. So that means that the prisons in the United States have gotten so filled that they basically now are contracting with corporations, and they're creating what's called private prisons. And you could see where there could be one right in your neighborhood. That's how common they are now. Private prisons are taking the place of the overcrowded conditions that the state prisoners can have. A lot of the prisoners are nonviolent, low budget prisoners, older prisoners that, you know, they're trying to balance out the population. But this today is becoming a profitable business. You got business places like JCPenney's. You got, you'd be surprised of businesses that are having their products now made and packaged by prisoners. Okay, now let me hear you say. And we want prisoners while they're in prison to have some means of, you know, supporting themselves, taking care of themselves, becoming responsible. Okay, but that's not what's going on here. And I want to make that clear, because if they were really, truly trying to help the prisoners and reduce recidivism, the recidivism rates wouldn't be what they are. But see, they gave up on recidivism. And now what they're doing is they're making money off the prisons. They're making money straight off the prisons. The recidivism rates are horrible. Okay. There's no way that just because you make the prisons private, that's going to make the prisons better. The states already had an issue. That's the reason why the prisons were busting out at the seams. Like I said, they put men and women in sardine cans, and then they pretty much just sit back and watch them, and, you know, hopefully they don't explode. 9 times out of 10, most places do explode. And the staff and correction folks sometimes don't stand a chance, especially when the place explodes, because the inmates just come out of nowhere and you're just surrounded. And what are you going to do? You know, I've seen times where the prisons exploded and, you know, five, six guards, you know, they can't get out of there. They're trapped. You know what I mean? And the inmates just going crazy. So this is a phenomenal. This is another way that we have been controlled and have been controlled for a number of years, because private prisons are basically corporations that are now forming their own private prisons, making their own rules, their own policies and procedures, which a lot of those rules sometimes conflict with what are the state policies and procedures. But because they're private companies and prisons and organizations, they're getting a buy with a lot of things, and a lot of abuse is not even being publicized, because right now there's so much going on in the world. Prisoners are a low budget priority. So by the time we find out all the things that's going on, the half the population is not even aware of private prisons right in their communities. They thinking that the state prison that they've seen out there, that medieval place, is the place that's for taking care of all the prisoners. That's not the case. Some places have minimum security facilities, community facilities that inmates kind of graduate to once they do the majority of their time behind the walls, or whatever the maximum, minimum, medium correctional facilities. A lot of times the correctional systems will basically get them out of the more secure levels and get them into more less secure facilities, like community work release centers, community work release detail. Therefore, an inmate has an opportunity to transitionally go from a more maximum security environment to a more community-oriented environment to start getting the inmate less robotical and more more thinking about responsibility and thinking about, you know, the way the real society works. If you ever seen the movie Life, and you see after Eddie Murphy and Martin Lawrence. This is just a movie kind of give an analogy. After they had been locked up for so long, they went to the baseball game, and and then they, right before then, they were also the deputy wardens, kind of like housekeepers. And when Claude, Claude Banks was one of them, and I believe that was played by Martin Lawrence, when he looked at himself in the car rearview mirror, he noticed how aged he had become. Well, this is what is typically happens to a lot of prisoners. They go into incarcerated environments, correctional environments, maximum security. They're in there a lot of times from anywhere from 5 years to, I've seen prisoners locked up from 30, 40, 50 years, being locked up that long. And then all of a sudden they're given an opportunity to transfer from a maximum security to a minimum security, or either a community correction facility, because they're trying to get them on their way to release and get them somewhat socialized. Because a lot of people basically leave the institutions institutionalized, including myself. I was very institutionalized when I first got out. I was muscle bound, didn't realize how muscle bound I was. My brother had invited me, I remember one time, over to his house, and I don't drink much alcohol, but when I do, it's very rare, but I had drank a little alcohol and was having time. You know, I went on parole. I was all off parole and everything, but, I was out in California, and I walked right through a screen. You know, I didn't even see the screen. That's how strong I was, you know, and Lord knows I didn't mean, you know, but that's just how strong I was. I didn't, you know. But I'm just saying, that's how institutionalized you can be and not even realize it, you know. And, you know, but you're just happy to be back with your family in a free way, you know what I mean? And being able to pull yourself up by the bootstraps while you in the maximum security facility. When I first went there, I had 16 to 25 years. And, you know, I was never a really bad guy. I was never really a criminal type guy. I just made some bad decisions. I was raised right, pretty much, you know, for the most part. I mean, I did have some issues with when I was a child and stuff like that, me and my father. But, you know, hey, I grew up. You know what I mean? I didn't let those kind of things hold me down, because I realized that the only way that I was going to make it in the world is I had to have a clear vision of what I was going to do for John, to get John independent from his family. So I didn't have to depend on my daddy and my mama, my aunties, my grandmother. You know, I could stand on my own, you know what I mean? And so that's one thing that I think that my earlier life helped me to do. It helped me to be independent. It helped me to see that it was me against the world. No matter what people say, they love you and cared about you, those are just words. Actions were very few for me. So this is the reason why I had to learn early in life that I was going to be successful no matter what it took. And, you know, I did everything that I could to be successful. And when I look back at today, I've come a long way. You know, I paid my dues. So it's good to be here and to share with you some of the things that I have personally seen. I have also, like I said, been incarcerated for 16 to 25 years. I served that time. I got out. I discharged that time. I think I did like almost 12 years, 7 months total. Less good time. And then and it was a 16 to 25 year sentence. And then I also got into a little spree with someone who was messing with my wife at that time, and got another case, a second degree murder case. That was just something the prosecutor, I believe, charged me with at the time, because it really wasn't that. I was defending myself, and, you know, somebody stabbing you, and the only thing you can see is the bluer or something silver. The only thing you can do, and I was a little intoxicated, and so was he. you know, the sun was hot and you're looking up, you see the sun, you see a bluer and someone's coming at you and you're physically tussling with this person. But yeah, so I was convicted of involuntary manslaughter. I got 4 to 10 years and I learned a lot from that. I learned a lot and I learned a lot. I seen prisoners in prisons, you know, trying to do the best they can. I seen prisoners who were going to be there all their lives. I seen prisoners do things that, you know, is ungodly. And I seen an environment that I knew it wasn't for me. I thank the judge for sentencing me there. He didn't have no choice, you know what I mean? Cause you know, he couldn't give me probation, you know, but he gave me a good fair sentence based on the situation. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot. I learned a lot. I was in prison twice, once on a robbery, 16 to 25 years, once on an involuntary manslaughter charge for 4 to 10 years. And please believe me, I learned a lot about men, about systems, about people. And nowadays I'm a square, total square. You know, I don't do much. I don't hang around with people that I was in prison with. Oftentimes I'll see them on Facebook. See them in passing, or when I go back to my city where I'm from in Omaha, Nebraska. Malcolm X said it clearly about Omaha, Nebraska. If you know anything about Malcolm X and Omaha, Nebraska, but Omaha, Nebraska is just a place where I was born. I was proud to be there. I was inspired by people like Ernest Chambers, who basically stood up and spoke out on behalf of the Near North Side. He was a senator there for many years, and Ernie is somebody I was totally inspired by. And, you know, later on, I was to actually meet him in an incarcerated environment. He did a lot of things for us in an incarcerated environment. I appreciate him. But he, in my state from Nebraska, is one of the major inspirations to me, even today, that we got to speak out, stand up for something. I don't care what nobody say. You got to stand for something, you know, in these days and time. And especially now as men, we need to stand up and be heard, you know, and do something. Do something for your community. Help the Democratic Party if that's your party. Help the independents if that's your party. Do what you can. I'm doing what I can by using my voice that God gave me to articulate with and utilize it to speak to people. And I'm trying my best to speak to the hearts and minds of people to let them know. Sometimes the stereotypes that people tell you ain't always true. There are exceptions. And one thing is there are lots of prisoners that are people of color that are being sentenced, that are being sentenced to longer sentences. They have been sentencing more often. They are pretty much disproportionate. We are the majority in the prison, even though we are a minority as a race, as a people. So I want to reach out to you guys. I want to hit this point. I'm going to hit it some more, and I'm going to keep hitting it. I'm going to keep hitting you with the blanket stats. But race in prisons, police killings of black people, these things correlate. These things all have meaning. They all have significance. We need to be aware. Just think, blacks are dying at the hands of white police officers. Black males, young black males, and older black males, and all in between, are sentenced to longer prison sentences in prisons and more often. And there's more blacks in prison than ever has been. I mean, so many black people in prison is disproportionately, just like black people are getting killed by white police officers. Now think about that. We're the majority in the jails, even though we're minority in the country. We're majority getting killed by white police officers. Think about that. And you tell me Marvin Gaye didn't have a point. What's going on, my brother? What's happening, my man? Can you tell me? Where are they still getting down? Are they still dancing where we used to go dance? You know? You remember the song? And tell me, friend, how in the world have you been? I just want to know what's going on. Talk to me out there, y'all. Okay, this is a podcast. I'm just going to kind of touch on some things.